Good morning. It is Friday, April 17th. It's Paul D'Souza here with Warren Giroux for our weekly wrap-up call. Warren, how have you been?
Been great, Paul. How about yourself?
Been doing well, thank you. It's been a busy week, so let's get right to it. Let's start with oil.
Well, at the last weekend, we thought there'd been some resolution, possible resolution of the supply side of things. And we saw oil initially on the weekend, anyway, after hours trading jump. But by Monday, things started to fizzle a little bit. And here we are at the end of the week, and oil is trading right around $18. It actually earlier this morning had been below $18 a barrel. So that's kind of disappointing. But at some point, they're going to have a resolution to this oversupply problem because it's damaging too many of the producers are under extreme stress, including, of course, our Canadian producers. And some of the smaller cap stocks are under quite a bit of stress. What's interesting is in talking to some of our private debt managers over the this past week, there seems to be some activity taking place in the oil patch, particularly in the junior group, with companies snooping around looking to buy assets. So this will give the opportunity to some of the larger players who have a little more funding to be able to go out and pick up some cheap assets. It's unfortunate for the smaller producers and the smaller small cap stocks, but certainly good for the larger cap stocks. So that sort of takes care of oil.
So on oil, let me just interject here. We know Trump is slowly opening up America or giving the power to the governors to do that. So as people return to work on a phased-in basis, I think that should I think pick up demand for oil and gasoline, wouldn't you think?
Probably it will. Usually, when we have a significant drop in oil prices like this, it acts as a stimulus when you're coming out of a recessionary period or economic, a slow period of economic growth. So, yeah, it should be. It should be a stimulus. It's nice to see the price at the pumps down quite substantially, but I have to admit that I haven't been out that often or that much to really even know what the price is locally here in Florida.
True.
I know it's considerably lower than it was.
Well, the shares yesterday of Gilead were up due to, I guess, promising news that the drug was effective in treating COVID-19. And so I think that's given the markets up a pop this morning as well. And we'll note that the S&P 500 broke through the 50-day moving average. The VIX is below 40. These are two metrics that we've been discussing over the past month that were important to indicate that the market's found its stable footing. I still can't quite shake the massive dichotomy between what's happening on Main Street versus Wall Street. And I think you and I aren't the only one. I think, every manager that we follow is kind of saying the same thing and scratching their heads. It's not making sense how the economy, what's happening now versus the shares of the price. I think we can only attribute that to, or not only attribute to it, but part of that reason is just the massive stimulus is just floating all asset prices.
Well, and that as well as usually the market leads the economy, so most often the market will advance quicker than the economy, or at least the statistics would indicate, and certainly Main Street. I mean, Paul Singer from Elliott Management is one of the he's been quite a stock picker over the years, and he was warned of this coronavirus very early on. And just recently, there's an article out that said that his gut tells him that a 50% or deeper decline in the stock market from the February's top is likely. And I know you and I've talked about that. And, of course, we referred to previous recessions or previous shock stock market shocks. And what typically happens is you have a bull rally after you have the initial drawdown, and then you go back and retest that previous low. And given the economic conditions that we're faced with, we I think both you and I are in that camp that we were likely or are likely to go test that low. And certainly, given what we've seen in the last week or so, the market has been quite strong. A little mixed this week, but it is ending on a strong note. So, it's a little bit confusing and mystifying, to say the least.
So let's talk about earnings. Banks reported this week, and I know they were below expectations.
Well, the big news there were the loan loss provisions. We saw a significant increase in loan loss provisions in the first quarter of 2020, comparatively speaking to, say, 2019. And just to give you some quick numbers, J.P. Morgan, for example, their loan loss provision in the first quarter of this year was $8.3 billion versus last year at the same time. So the first Q1 was 1.5. Citibank was 7 versus 2.2. Bank of America was 4.8 versus 1.2. Mm-hmm. So this is just the initial indication that these banks are expecting some major difficulties in their loan portfolios. And some people are suggesting that if we compare it to what happened in 2008-2009, which was a housing crisis, of course, their suggestion is that based on the extent of the economic drawdown or economic lack of economic activity in the U.S., that they could see substantial increase in these loan loss provisions coming in the second quarter. Because we're really, I mean, at this point, they're anticipating, but they really have no idea how much or what the impact is going to be on the consumer sort of balance sheet.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, these earnings reports really were probably just for 2 months. It was good months. And then we have half of March literally being impacted. So, entire second quarter could be just really looking forward to see what that looks like. So what about then the unemployment numbers yesterday came out at over 5 million, brings it up to 22 million in total right now and still probably counting.
That was a little bit better than what was anticipated. I think they anticipated about 5.5 or 5.4. So it was a little bit better, but still, when you look at the total number of unemployed in the U.S., it's quite dramatic and gives an unemployment rate in the U.S. of, I think, for around 13%. Mm-hmm. Is what I read recently. So, think about eight weeks ago, that's quite a dramatic change from being having one of the lowest unemployment rates in history and then going to this almost virtually overnight. It's something we've never, ever seen before.
Mm-hmm. Now we're following companies that are suspending or cutting their dividends. And surprisingly, there hasn't been many, but do you expect more?
I would think so. As we've talked before, I think, Paul, it's just how fast are companies going to be able to resume full production? Certainly, I would expect in, restaurants, food chains, entertainment, travel, leisure, recreational type sectors, I think they're going to feel significant pain because as we were talking earlier, we were talking about the reopening and how that's going to phase in. Those particular sectors are going to be the ones that are more than likely going to be have a little more lasting impact. They'll be the last to resume full activity. And the other thing, I was reading just this morning that in northern China that have resumed. Everything is back to normal, supposedly. But what's happened is the consumer, the individuals, are not behaving the way they did prior to this. In other words, they're very, very reticent to go out to the restaurants. They're reticent to go in places where there's large gatherings. The shock and the impact of what they just experienced is going to remain with many consumers probably for some time to come. So they won't, be running out the door and running to, the movie theaters and so forth and so on.
So let's talk about that. So Trump has rolled out his plan to allow the governors just to give them their discretion on how to open up, which I think is smart. I mean, this virus, the COVID-19 has been somewhat politicized and Trump's in a reelection year and he's almost, does he open it up? Does he not? The cure is worse than the disease. Every state has its own numbers in terms of where they are on the growth curve of this. So, I, again, will restaurants impose restrictions on how many people are in there, movie theaters, et cetera? It's, you know, there's a lot to be seen. And then again, the economy will it be impacted by that? Obviously, it will.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his guidelines, I actually thought, you know, earlier in the week he was talking that he had the power to reopen the economy and, you know, he was the ultimate authority. And there were some issues with some governors. They were sort of challenging that. And it's nice to see that he stepped back from that. And he's listed some guidelines or metrics, as he call them, that he thinks that states should satisfy before proceeding to a phased opening. And there's basically three phases. So, you know, I think it's a very measured approach. It makes sense. It allows the states, you know, various states are being impacted differently. I think North Dakota is one of the states that has fewer cases than many, many other states, one of the, probably the lowest. And they have wanted to open up right away or open up, you know, sooner than others. Whereas you have New York, for example, and they probably will be one of the last to open up because they have such a high density of cases in that state. So, I think it's good that he has allowed people, each governor, to determine their situation, their own statewide situation, and reopen on a measured basis. I think it makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And I think that also stirs some optimism as well in the equity markets, Paul, that, you know, Trump has backed off his usual approach on this, in this situation. And is giving the states the freedom to reopen as they see fit. I think, you know, a combination of the fact that the number of cases have calmed down or have slowed, the fact that there is a plan in place now, at least there are some guidelines, and allowing the states to administer those guidelines and follow them at their own discretion. We're seeing the same thing in Europe, reopening going on. Certain countries are going to be reopening quicker or sooner than others. For example, Austria has reopened small restaurants and shops, including hardware stores, but wearing a mask is compulsory. Then you have, for example, France has decided to have the lockdown last till May the 11th. Germany is allowing small shops to reopen. Secondary schools will begin to reopen by, I think, May the 3rd, or they can open after, I should say. Ireland, I think they have a quarantine till May the 5th. Italy, some shops are reopening, but not in the Lombardy area, which is where, you know, most of the cases were. Spain, the manufacturing construction businesses have been reopened and so forth. Sweden, the most progressive country thought as is most progressive, has been the most permissive of the large economies, and restaurants and schools are open. However, there is a ban on more than 50 people gathering in one spot. So, you know, this is all optimism that things are going to start to return to normal, but, you know, it remains to be seen how long that normal is. And also regarding earnings, if the consumer, who, you know, is primary driver of the economy, if the consumer is slow to get back into the groove, so to speak, to get back into shopping and going out and doing, resuming normal activities, of course, that's going to impact earnings, and it will be a little slower coming back than what we'd like to hope for. But still, I think we have been saying that we thought that it would be Q2 or Q3, Q4, and maybe even early next year before we would see a complete resumption of normal, and it will be a new normal. It won't be quite the same as it has been.
Well, the lower earnings and lack of earnings is also going to erode the tax base. And there's a study by Morgan Stanley I was looking at the other day, said that the deficit will total at least $3.7 trillion in 2020. I think that could be a bit low. An additional $3 trillion in 2021. So this suggests nearly $5 trillion in extra deficit spending in the next 2 years, where on the previous projected growth rate, the national debt wasn't expected to be $29 trillion until the year 2025. So this has just exacerbated it. In Canada, we have the budget deficit in 2019 was $16 billion. And in 2020 is $180 billion estimated, probably going to be higher. So that's 10 times the amount. And just reading on a note that the cumulative debt in Canada for it's a 153-year-old country we are. The cumulative debt was $750 billion. And in 1 year, we're adding 25% to that. So $180 billion in 1 year versus 750 or 153 years. That's just a sounding statistic.
Well, it is. And, you know, before we entered this virus period, we had state and local governments, provincial governments, they were in desperate financial situation and caused primarily by the unfunded liability of promises that they made to their workers and the bureaucrats and so forth, retired individuals working for the government. And, you know, this just exacerbated it, and it's going to bring it to a head much sooner than we had hoped it would come. But, you know, everybody would say we can grow our way out. I don't believe we can. And I think what we needed to see were cuts to certain benefits and programs to reduce some of this liability. Because at the end, if this keeps escalating, and certainly this virus situation is something no one could have predicted, but it's going to have a significant impact on the ability of governments to meet their obligations and promises, especially when you consider they've just been through a period of virtually no revenue collection or much reduced revenue collection. And, you know, just by handing out these fines, as we were talking earlier, you know, the individuals, you know, $800 in, I think, Toronto area plus, it just isn't going to cover the shortfall. And
exactly.
It doesn't even keep pace. So it's going to be a big strain going forward. I would expect to see, I think a lot of people are expecting to see higher taxes, which of course is not good for the economy. It slows the economy even further. So it's going to be a problem, and it's certainly going to take a long time to digest what we've just done or what has been done, but it had to be done, I think.
We're coming full circle. I mean, we know that the consumer is 75 to 80% of the GDP, and that we have small businesses in the United States and Canada as the engine of the economy, and they're both most affected during this. And so, you know, how we have a booming stock market during this time while an eroding, base. Again, still scratching our heads. So we'll keep watching this and keep informing everyone and speaking to people and trying to make sense of this. So anything else while we wrap this up today?
No, I don't think so, Paul. It's been quite a week, and it's been quite a period that we've gone through here the last, call it 8 weeks. I'm sure there'll be more to come.
All right. Thanks for your time. Good speaking
Thank you.
And until next week.
Okay.
Bye now.
Have a nice weekend.